Morning, everyone. I just want to thank everyone, first of all, for giving just this opportunity for us to share about the ministry work that we're doing in the city. And then I'm going to let Emma share first, and then I'll come up and share what I'm doing afterwards. But for those, I feel like everyone knows us. I have it down to say, introduce ourselves, but I'm looking around going, most people know who we are. But for those that might not, we're Dave and Emma Ansley, and we're both missionaries in the city. Myself with Youth for Christ, working at Light Patrol, and Emma with Scarborough Outreach Mission. I should know that, right? Just working in the local community with kids and young families and young moms. I also just want to thank you because so many people here just are partnered with us in so many different ways, whether it's financially supporting us as missionaries, supporting Emma's ministry, or just even joining us and helping us out in so many different ways. You've been such a blessing and encouragement to both of us, and that really just helps so much as we go out and do the work that we're doing, because it can be hard at times, and so I'm just like so thankful for that as well. So I'm going to sit down and let Emma share. And then I'll share a bit afterwards. If we have time at the end, we'll give a little bit of time for questions as well. But if not, please come up to us after and we'll be more than happy to answer any questions you have as well. Thanks.
So, as David said, my name's Emma, for anyone that I might not know here. And I'm a missionary here at the church to mothers and families living in a government housing community called Warden Woods. That's located about 5 minutes from our church here. And I also just want to take a minute just to say thank you so much to everybody for the great support that you've been to David and I and to the ministries that we're involved in. So many of you have given items for moms, for babies, helped with Christmas outreaches, come up with your own ideas. Many people have come and said, I have this idea or this skill or talent, like, is there a way that this could be used? And many people have prayed so intentionally. I want to thank Marjorie for just the support that she's been always asking for prayer requests and relaying these at the prayer meetings. And I just also want to say, just thank you for your kindness and generosity and the extension of God's love that you are to me and to those in Warden Woods. If you do have an idea or a skill or a talent, if you're a prayer warrior or you have on your heart to be more involved with families directly, I'd love to connect with you and talk more about that. I just want to start off by sharing a few statistics. Toronto is said to be the child poverty capital in Canada, with 1 in 4 children living in poverty. The average income for a household that pays rent to geared income is $16,600. Compared to the average Toronto household income of $75,270. So you can see there's a big gap there. The elementary school in Warden Woods called Taylor Creek scored on the lower end of the Ontario testing in the bottom 20 schools out of 466 schools. And there's many different reasons for that that we'll talk about. Some other struggles for young people living in Warden Woods are a high percentage of teen pregnancy, absent fathers, and young single mothers. And often this is difficult because if you have a young person, a young girl at home, and she maybe hasn't had a father figure in her life, there's a huge craving to experience that protection and that love. And can be really easy to find that in another male. And for the males, if you haven't seen a dad in your life growing up, to stay with a girl who's got pregnant, that might not be the norm for you and even the expectation. So that can create a little bit of a cycle. Also, this means that there's a lot of children that live at times very adult lives. So they might be doing adult things like doing their homework after school by themselves if they do their homework, putting themselves to bed, kind of choosing their bedtime routine, what they have for dinner, taking care of younger siblings, and maybe going to bed on the couch at 2 in the morning. I know that's the case for some of the little ones I know, and choosing their lunch for the next day. So if mom hasn't had the time maybe to do groceries, it might mean grabbing like a bag of chips or pop. That's what I would choose if I was a little kid. And you can see how that going to school the next day could make it very difficult for you as you're trying to learn in the classroom and for teachers as well. Kevin and Norva and Alma could all tell tons of stories, I'm sure, about that and would know a lot more about the struggles in the classroom than I would. Higher crime rates are a reality. 98. This is difficult, though, because often the media, as we know, can paint things with a broad brush, and it's really challenging when they sometimes paint an entire community of people with this broad brushstroke, when in reality maybe there was one person that made a poor choice. So that can be really difficult. Higher access to drugs and alcohol. Welfare is very common, and if you know about that system, it's incredibly difficult to get out of once you're involved in it. A gang presence is also a reality and can be a real draw for young males. If you're a boy and at school you're struggling and maybe don't have a lot of money at home and you're looking around the classroom and see all the other boys with their brand new Nike shoes, if you're offered the chance to sell drugs and make money like that, that can be a difficult temptation, especially as well if you haven't had a dad at home and you're being offered this love and acceptance from older males. There really, really is a strong bond and family feel within the gang community, and that can be a real draw. Discrimination and police injustice is a very real reality. Difficulty accessing necessities such as dental care and warm winter clothing. Growing up, I had many fears and had made many assumptions about homelessness and the marginalized in society from friends and stories I'd heard or on the media. And I think it's really natural as society and as churches and Christians to try to understand poverty in Canada from what we've maybe been heard or stories on the news. But as we all know, just like any assumptions, we can't really know the truth about anybody or their situation until we get to know them and try to understand life in their shoes. I grew up north of Toronto in a small town called Innisfil, surrounded by farms and in a small tiny subdivision. And growing up, I felt I had a burden on my heart for the vulnerable and marginalized in society, but I had no idea what to do about this burden that God had placed on my heart. God gave me the opportunity when I was 18 to be connected with missionaries in Warden Woods, and they acted as a type of window for me to look outside of my world and my upbringing and background and my life into someone else's world. And they came alongside me and introduced me to friends in the neighborhood, and that was just such a blessing in my life. And in the same way that God has done this for me, I also pray that I likewise can be a window to come alongside believers who may have a burden for the vulnerable in our community. As many of you know, over the years I was running an after-school program for kids and youth, first in Warden Woods and then here at the church. And during that time, I would often get to meet the parents of the kids and the moms when I dropped them home from school, but it was often a short interaction, and in that time, in that season, God really began to show me that if I wanted to reach these children, the mothers were really, they are the primary influence over their children in the home. And in order to reach these kids, he put the moms on my heart to reach the moms. But at that time, I didn't have the time to do that because of the program. But God opened, moved me on and opened a door here at Scarborough Baptist for me to be able to spend time reaching out to the young moms in the community. So I just want to stop for a second and just point out the significance of our church, where it's located. I think it's just incredible to think that for so many years, years and years before I ever came to Scarborough Baptist, this church was involved in ministry and connections with Warden Woods through various people, through different ministries, and a bus ministry that used to pick people up, I think about 20 years ago, and bring them here, and that God has kept that connection for some reason, and he's done that and allowed this to continue, and through, yeah, different people and ministries, and I think that's so special, and just something we can pray about as a church is what's that about and what is God doing. And it's been 2 years now since I've been blessed to spend time with many moms, and through friendship with them and their families, I've gained some understanding into some of the challenges they face day to day. Many moms have shared with me that they have limited support people in their life and few to call in times of crisis. Many have shared that they live paycheck to paycheck and may have empty fridges by the last week of the month, their phone may be out of service, or their electricity may be cut off. I've known kids that would do their homework in the winter by candlelight just to save money on that for the last week of the month, which just to me is pretty shocking for me. I've never experienced that myself. Many have experienced significant trauma that maybe in their childhood or teenage years, and the effects of that trauma really can still affect them day to day and make life incredibly difficult. At times, moms may choose to remain in abusive situations or relationships for the sake of keeping a father figure in their life. Many have experienced police injustice and discrimination in the community. Many have shared feelings of being totally without hope and alone in the world. A mom once shared with me, "I felt so ashamed for having no money to even buy a bus ticket that I stayed inside my house and hid from society's judgment." Another mom once shared, "On my birthday, at the end of the day every year, I would stand in my shower and cry, as again a year had passed and no one had called." Slideshow's gonna start, I believe. Yeah. So over the last 2 years, God has led me to build relationships with moms and families through having a ministry of presence, and to offer God's hope and love to these moms and families by being a listening ear, a support in times of crisis, helping to access resources, offering to go alongside appointments, and being an advocate to agencies they may be in contact with. Practically, this could look like everyday things like going to Tim Hortons to share coffee, coming here to the church to choose out baby donations, maybe making a meal together, or having a time of Bible study and praying together. This can also look like being present in the more challenging times of life, whether helping a mom locate a food bank, helping a mom who may have children's aid involved in her life work towards steps to keep her children in her home, or standing with a mom when the police come to share that her teenage son has gotten into a fight. This could also look like coming alongside for exciting life events, graduations, track meets, a new baby being born, lots of time to celebrate. I've noticed that something really, really special happens when I set aside my hopes for others and my plans, and simply be a friend and a presence of God's love through the ups and downs in life. Over time, friendships begin to form, and there's an exchange that takes place, just like in any friendship that we have. Moms will share what's important in their life and the stresses and challenges that they face and how they cope with these, and I'm invited to share what's important in my life and my stresses and challenges and how Jesus impacts my life daily. Through spending time with moms and also the high school girls group here at the church, I'm excited to say that the harvest is plenty and the harvest is ripe. There's a hunger for truth and a searching for hope for more than this world has to offer. Though I can't fix police injustice, I can't convince a young girl that she's valuable enough not to be in a bad relationship, and I can't heal the brokenness of a boy who misses his dad. But I do have reason to hope. In John 16:3-3, it reads, "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." I can share what I do when problems are too big for me. I can share that Christ has never once left me alone. I can share that he is above every storm and remains with me in every storm. I can share that Christ gives hope to overcome really hard things in our life that are in our control, and to endure the things that we can't control. Sometimes I get asked what God's been teaching me in this season. God uses this work and these relationships to help me gain a richer understanding of his character of love and grace, and he helps me to know him more deeply. David told me not to stray from my notes, but I'm going to stray from them for a second. The other night, this week, I got to spend 2 nights in the community in the evening, and if anyone's ever been in Wardham Woods in the evening, it's such a beautiful scene. There's just a real sense of community that I did not experience growing up in my subdivision at home. We might have known a couple neighbors, but not like the community in Wardham Woods. The families are so interconnected. A grandma might yell to an older an older male who's 20, hey, go grab my grandkid who's running away in their diaper. And there's just this real sense of helping one another. And there's a resiliency and a generosity and just a sense of humility and compassion that I haven't seen before. And that's just been such a blessing for me that God's used to show me more of who he is and his character. It's so easy for me to believe Satan's trick to believers when I'm doing this work, that I need to produce fruit to be holy and please God, rather than I need to be with the Holy One and he will produce the fruit. Trying to produce fruit apart from Christ's Spirit in me, I get tired and burnt out and frustrated at those I seek to love. The work is heavy and discouraging. But when I allow his Spirit to do the work, he sets the direction, he shows the tasks of the day, and his Spirit gives me all I need. The work is full of joy, hope, and peace, and is not burdensome when his Spirit is at work within me. He also uses this work to challenge the legalistic tendencies in my heart that condemn others and myself alike. How often do I think I'm somehow better in God's eyes than those in the world? God reminds me that though I've been saved by Christ, in my humanity, I am no different. Major Ian Thomas shares to Christians, "The flesh within you has never once ceased to love sin and never will. Given half the chance, it will always manifest its corruption and depravity." God continues to make it so evident that the difference between me as a saved believer and the world as unsaved is not found in the righteousness of who I am or what I do, but in the righteousness of who I know. Lately, I found myself in situations where the effects of someone's sin is staring me blatantly in the face, and it's so easy for me to judge their sin while having enough grace for my pride. I was recently with a young teenage girl, and when dropping her off at home, she shared that she had spent the night with a boy. In shame, she then said, "I immediately regretted it, and I just knew I was going to hell." I have to admit that in this moment, my heart did not reflect the loving heart of Jesus for this girl, but was closer to the heart of a Pharisee. Instead of seeing the girl's brokenness and need for the love of Jesus that she had tried to find in this boy, I was so distracted by her sin. I felt uncomfortable, and everything inside me wanted to turn my head away to avoid looking her in the eyes. But God directed me to stay present with her in her confession. If I had turned my head away, I would have missed seeing the shame, emptiness, and brokenness in her eyes, and her desperate need in that moment, not for my judgment, but for the love of Christ. In this season, I feel the Lord has been impressing on my heart that the Father turned his face away from Jesus on the cross so that God could turn his face towards us. A God who broke bread with sinners, that touched the unclean, that offered forgiveness, dignity, love, mercy, and hope to the wretched ones of society. A God who is not too proud or too shocked or ashamed at us in our rebellious state and our helpless state. Our sin and brokenness did not make him withdraw away from us, but his love drew him to us. A mom recently told me, "I really want to go to church, but I'm just not good enough yet." As a believer, what a message we have to share to this mom and to the world. You're absolutely right. You aren't good enough, and neither am I, but Jesus died to set us free. May we rejoice that we serve a God that is not unaware or shocked with our battle with sin, but loves us in spite and remains ever-present, calling us to him, our righteousness. May we rejoice in a God that does not leave us in our sin, but redeems us day by day. Thank you. David is going to share now.
I should just let Emma keep sharing. So like I said before, I work with Light Patrol, which is a ministry of Toronto Youth for Christ, or Youth Unlimited, as some people might know it. And it's a ministry that seeks to serve some of Toronto's most vulnerable young people who are experiencing homelessness and poverty, kids who live on the margins of our world and society. Again, I just wanted to share some kind of facts, just because no matter how often and how much time I spend with people that are experiencing homelessness and living life on the street or in a shelter, I'm always just blown away by just some of the realities in our world. I was sitting earlier, and I was sitting right underneath the air conditioner, and going, "I'm so cold," but I'm just, every now and again, I catch myself and go, "It's nice, it's cold." I'm not stuck outside in the sun all day just sitting there, and so I feel like we all need reminded of the reality of the world we live in at times. So each night in Toronto, there's approximately 2,000 young people experiencing homelessness in our city. The age that the city uses for these statistics is 25 and under, and so there's 2,000 people, 25 or under, living on our streets. Over 70% of those identified having left home due to abuse or a lack of safety. So these aren't people making some choice or choosing to have some adventure. These are people running away from home because it's not safe. I don't know for you, but I love going home to see my parents. I'm going home to visit my mom and dad for their birthdays as a surprise in a week. And I'm just so excited. I can't imagine having to fear home and to leave and to see that being on the street is actually a safer option. 85% of homeless youth fall into the high symptom, high distress category for mental health, with 42% acknowledging at least one suicide attempt. So this isn't a walk in the park. This is really a tough life that these people are living. Something I actually read recently in a paper was the average life expectancy for a homeless person in Canada is 39 years old. So for us as people that know the gospel and the truth and the love of Christ, there really isn't time to spare for reaching out to these people and sharing God's love with them, because there's not much time. And so it's actually kind of frightening. But for us as people here, again, that know the gospel and know Christ's love for us, we really need to recognize that there are those in our city and our communities who find the light at the end of the tunnel to be in the tunnel itself. Those who find safety in the darkness of an alleyway rather than the security and safety of a loving home or community. From my experience in the work that I'm doing, no one chooses to become homeless. But truly their poverty, addictions at times, hardness, and issues are a result of the difficulty and trauma in their lives. They are victims of the harshness and brokenness of our sinful and fallen world. When we look all through the New Testament, we can see that Jesus had a great heart for the poor and brokenhearted, and we too must have his heart for his people. We must avoid the temptation to point a blaming finger at the poor to justify our lack of loving action. I grew up in Northern Ireland in a small town as well, and even since I've started doing this work and talking to my parents, my mom would kind of say, I remember that one homeless guy. And so it wasn't something I experienced, but I've caught myself since coming here with no experience and no foreknowledge or ideas about homelessness, but how often I've caught myself and how often do we catch ourselves saying they must have spent all their money on drugs or alcohol, so I shouldn't give them money. Or it was their bad choices that made them homeless, so I don't know if I should help. It's so easy for us to fall into that kind of thinking of they're going to do something irresponsible, and so I'm scared to help because I might actually take on some of that blame and sinfulness myself. I'm often reminded of the story of the Good Samaritan who helped, even though the priests and the Pharisee didn't, because they were scared of becoming unclean. How often do we do the same thing? We don't help because we're scared that we're actually helping in someone's sin. There's a great call for all of us to be helping the poor and those that are experiencing homelessness or life on the street. And so I thought I'd share a little about Light Patrol, because I realized last week, Regina, you asked me a question of like, so what do you actually do? And I've realized I've stood up here so many times and I've clearly not done a good job of explaining what Light Patrol does, if this is maybe the fourth time I've been up here and it's never actually made that clear. So Light Patrol has the vision and hope. I think there's a slideshow as well that might start. Yeah. So Light Patrol has the vision and hope of seeing holistic growth and transformation in those we serve, no matter how small or insignificant it might seem. I think sometimes we get into this temptation of wanting to see this miraculous growth, but I'm always reminded of how patient God is with me, and so sometimes we just need to be patient with those we're working with too. We believe there's more in store for our friends than being clothed, fed, and moved off the streets, however important that is. As we do our work, we hold some core values in hand. So the first is keeping Jesus as the center of all we do. Every time we step out into ministry, we're always intentional inviting Jesus into it to lead us and guide us and give us wisdom. I always ask him for wisdom because there's so many times I look at people and I go, I just don't know. I don't know what to do to help. Another core value is relationships as our key approach in ministry. We believe that we can't just walk in and start telling someone how to fix their life, but really we need to build a relationship and let them guide how we can help them. Presence, we believe highly in just being physically present, being a redemptive and positive presence in the lives of those we meet. And lastly, dignity. In everything we do, we want to make sure that we're treating those we meet with as much dignity as possible. These are people that the world has stripped dignity away, and it can be such a loving thing to just intentionally try and build that dignity and serve with dignity in their lives. People have often asked me what the greatest needs of homeless youth are, and most would think that they're food, clothing, and healthcare. But they're not, however vital those are. But instead, the greatest needs are trust, hope, and dignity found fully in Jesus Christ. For all of us, for me, for you, and for those living on the streets or under a bridge, those are the greatest needs we all have. And without those, not one of us can be truly whole or ever fully feel well. Light Patrol seeks to share the love of Jesus Christ and to support and give opportunity to youth to make positive steps towards holistic transformation in their lives. We do this through providing immediate support, such as clothing, food, and healthcare, or through long-term support, such as offering a safe place to rest from the chaos of the streets or a helping hand through mentorship. Light Patrol has four initiatives or programs through which we aim to give the necessary and immediate and long-term support for the homeless youth we serve. We believe that these four initiatives are key to that vision of restoring trust, hope, and dignity in those we serve. And really, that's just with the hope of them being able to experience Christ and wholeness and healthiness in their lives, which I think are things we all need and crave. So our first, a lot of the pictures you're seeing up on the screen are from our outreach, which is kind of our first part of our ministry. So we have a really big, obnoxiously bright red RV that we drive around the downtown core, and we also have a smaller nursing van staffed by two nurses every night. And they journey through the downtown core, seeking out and meeting with those who need immediate help with critical needs. The outreach provides food, clothing, healthcare, warmth, and relationship where it is needed most. We aim to go to where the youth are, under bridges, in alleyways, or sheltering in doorways, and to seek out the most marginalized and excluded by society, those who cannot or do not feel comfortable to access other services. When I first started with Light Patrol, we used to do about six stops in one evening throughout the downtown core, and it always just felt very rushed. We'd be there maybe 15 minutes trying to make sure everyone's helped and asking people how they're doing and checking in. And so after a year, we did a survey being like, how can we help serve you better? And we had multiple people say, you always ask me how I am, but you don't have time to listen. And that, for me, just broke my heart of, like, how can we be failing at that? And so we've scaled back to, we only do three stops for about 40 minutes each night that we go out driving around. And that's with the hope that people can really come on. And we talk about experiencing home, that we would take home to the streets, that this is, it's not something where they're handed food and asked to leave quickly, but that they can come on and actually just take some time to relax. And it's been great to see just how that's changed, and now people are playing board games, and we have someone starting an arts program on the RV, and just all these different things that we would take for granted. Emma always says when we have people saying, oh, we should play a board game, and I kind of go, ah, I hate playing board games, but I can just do things like that whenever I want, and I have a choice. And so we just really want to offer the people we meet just an opportunity to do normal things that they might not get to do. Our outreach runs twice a week and sees approximately 60 people each night, and often more in the summer. On Thursday night, I pulled up in the RV to a park expecting one or two people, and we met 20. and they're just sleeping outside on the grass. So when it rained yesterday, they most likely got very wet because they're just outside lying there sleeping, and that's just because there's nowhere for them to go. I actually wanted to read you a recap of one of our evenings of outreach from the winter by one of our outreach leaders, just because I think it might give you a more clear idea of how a night kind of goes. So the first stop was Queen and Spadina. We saw 19 people here, so it was pretty busy. It started off very quiet and progressively got busier and busier with lots of new faces. We met a young man who said he had previously visited the RV. He shared with us that he is addicted to fentanyl and wanted to go into rehab. By the time we were able to figure out what that looked like, he had taken some more drugs and became highly aggressive. So we ended up giving him a card with phone numbers and a list of places to get help. Please pray for him, since the contrast between the time he asked for help and what he was like after taking some drugs was so extreme it was frightening. Pray he goes and gets help, or comes again to the RV and is more open to us continuing what we started. There are many new faces at this stop, and many were younger people. We were all happy to see Roger, who was so kind and calm and always a favorite person for us to connect with. The gardener. Dexter and Dorian came, and it was, the names aren't real, just so you know, came, and it was a bit distressing to see how they are with each other. Please pray for both of them, since neither are happy and they need some solutions for their situation. Kai came again and brought his friends. We were fortunate to connect with a young girl who thinks she is pregnant and give her a pregnancy test kit and some clothing. She stated that she was scared to be pregnant, and we assured her that what the test results show, we would journey with her and support her as best we can. Dan reported to the paramedics had visited him that day and looked at his toes, and they seemed to be okay. He is to come on Monday to get them looked at by us one more time, since he is saying they still hurt. Likely the frostbite has caused some nerve damage. At our last stop, we visited with Jonathan and a friend of Jonathan's named Kara and Noah. After such a busy night, it was nice to concentrate our conversations on fewer people. Jonathan shared his brother recently died of a fentanyl overdose, leaving his wife and three kids without him. He didn't want to end up that way and was trying to get a job and housing. He said he would come back on Monday. It consistently feels like our relationships with our friends are getting deeper, and they're asking for more help and seeking us out. So Lord, help us to know what to do for each one and give us wisdom and grace to be there for them. So that's just one. If I get these emails, if I'm not out on outreach, I get these emails at the end of the night, and sometimes I just lie in bed, because I'll get this at like 11:30 or so at night, and then just, it leaves me grateful for the upbringing I had, the family I had, the fact I'm married to Emma and living in a wonderful like apartment with everything I need. It could have been so different. I didn't make any of that happen. I didn't choose that. This is just God's grace in my life from the very beginning. And it always makes me think how, I always like to ask people the question when they're thinking of volunteering with Light Patrol is, if you were to miss two paychecks, where would you be? And it's something for us to think about. Do we have the community and the friends and the family that can come through and help us? Do we have the savings? All those different things. Because if we didn't, we're not actually that far off from where some of our friends are that are experiencing homelessness. Our next program that we have after, so that's kind of our outreach, and then we actually have programs that we refer to as youth care. So that's when we start to build more of a relationship with the youth that we work with. So one of those is called Lighthouse. So it's a hospitality space where our youth workers can offer hospitality to young women experiencing life on the streets. And it kind of has the vision of being a place of peace, warmth, security, and love. An afternoon here could be cooking a favorite childhood meal, watching a movie together, or maybe just having a nap in a safe, quiet, and warm home. A memorable story for me that I think I've shared here before is that of a 23-year-old girl wanting to make a blanket fort, as she felt she had missed out on that as a child. However, Lighthouse is also somewhere where a young woman can shower, do her laundry, and connect with someone who cares in a home space rather than a more clinical shelter environment. Next, we have youth support. So through our staff and the volunteers that we have, we offer consistent support to those who have no one to walk with them as they work towards whole life transformation, and as we pray and hope that God is working in their lives too. This could mean offering help with a job application, going to a court date, meeting with a doctor, or just being a good friend as a youth transitions into a new stage of life. Again, how often do we take for granted the family, friends, and church supports we have? How often do we find encouragement, accountability, or just plain old friendship in our communities? So for Light Patrol, we really just have this heart to seek to be the community that a youth needs as they make steps towards healthiness in their lives. Homelessness is more than not having four walls and a roof. There's a picture that I think has gone past already, and it'll come up again, of one of my coworkers, Bianca, and an older man who I've known for years and has finally, I don't know why, just decided I'm going to get housing, I'm going to get off the streets, and he did. So he has an apartment in the west end of the city, but I keep seeing him at the same spot where we've always seen him for years, that he was camping out underneath the gardener. And it's because he's lonely. So he has this apartment and the city gave him furniture and he has money to buy food and everything that we all have, but he has no community. The city moved him to where there is available housing, which is far away. And so he still comes down and sometimes sleeps outside because these are his friends. And again, that's just somewhere where for us as a church and as a community, that's him there. We can be that community for people. We can be somewhere where he doesn't have to be lonely. He can come and have a community around him. And so the last thing that I've started working on in the last year with Light Patrol is just some like community development. And so as we've helped people transition away from homelessness and living on the street, we're seeking to kind of expand what we're doing so that we can actually help them in those next stages. So building communities of support for people that people would have, whether it's a friend group or a church, that who are just willing to visit. So someone that can say, I'm going to come and meet you for coffee. I'm going to come and take you for dinner, or I'm actually going out to do this. Do you want to come alongside and do it with me? Because I can't imagine living my life without the community that I have. I'm an introvert as well, but there are definitely times where I walk away from church and I'm like, I needed that. I needed that so much, just to see people and know that I'm cared about and valued and loved. So that's kind of what Light Patrol does. My role at Light Patrol is to oversee the staff and volunteers and the outreach of the ministry. So Light Patrol has three staff that I help oversee and approximately 60 committed and faithful volunteers that I have the joy of training, supervising, coaching, and discipling. And then after this, I spend quite a bit of time on planning, budgeting, and advocating for the ministry, whether that's through connecting with other agencies and fundraising, or just ensuring that Light Patrol has all it needs to succeed and thrive as a ministry, God willing, of course. Again, Scarborough Baptist Church has been such a blessing in that so many people bring clothes or bring items or blankets for me to be able to give out, which is, it's always amazing how God provides through his body and his people. There's been so many times I've come to church thinking, oh, I wonder if I can mention this, and someone comes up to me and goes, I've actually got all these sweaters I need to get rid of. And it's just, it's amazing how God knows those needs and puts on people's hearts before I even have to say anything, which is so incredible. In the midst of doing those things, I always like to ensure that I spend one evening a week, minimum, in direct ministry. And that's just to ensure that I remember why I do all the other stuff. Sometimes I can get so mixed up in just doing emails and things like that, that I forget why I'm doing it. And so I always like to go out on outreach once a week, just so I can be in touch and see people. And it keeps me grounded and me humble in my own life and walk with Christ. I'd like to finish with just asking if you guys can be in prayer for the Light Patrol team. Over the last while, it's been quite just difficult. And so even as I shared the recap, just you can see a bit of what some of our staff and volunteers go through. And so working with These youth can be exhausting. It can feel hopeless. I often wish that it was a ministry where people lives were changing all the time, but they're not. And so if people can just be praying. We plan and work with great hope in what God can do, but often our work looks like comforting a young person dying in hospital, supporting a drug addict to make sure they don't overdose, watching as CAS takes a child away in hospital, or urging someone with frostbite to go to hospital, or listening to someone's story of abuse and pain, or sitting with someone struggling with mental health on a street corner and being the first person to listen in weeks. It's really tough. And so we'd really appreciate your prayers just for hope and peace and joy in the midst of all of this. So thank you.